Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is part two. In part one, we covered a variety of subjects based on listener questions sent to radioprogram@AOL.com. And Layla, what's our next question?
Okay, we've got an email from Isabel. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've started to take Niacel to try to prevent glaucoma, which runs in my family. I've been taking niacinamide 550 milligrams almost daily. Now that I'm taking Niacel, should I stop or reduce the amount of niacinamide? And just how much of Niacel and niacinamide together would be too much? Thank you both for all the valuable information you give to us. You're welcome, Isabel.
Right. Isabel, I like the way you think, because I got to say, that's an issue that has actually come to mind for me, is after reading that vitamin B3 or niacinamide, which is really cheap, you know, it's a commodity, it's not expensive, you know, $9.99 a bottle, has a protective effect against glaucoma. I then took a bit of a leap to posit that an even more metabolically bioavailable form of niacinamide, which is nicotinamide riboside. By the way, niacinamide and nicotinamide are the same. They're just the two names for the same thing, like ascorbic acid and ascorbate, the same thing. But nicotinamide,
vitamin C, yes.
Right, vitamin C. Nicotinamide riboside is a direct precursor to nicotine adenine dinucleotide, which is NAD, which is one of the key energy compounds within the cells. So why should niacinamide, nicotinamide, or nicotinamide riboside be helpful for glaucoma? The thought is in glaucoma that, you know, we used to think of glaucoma as just like, you know, if you inflate a balloon, eventually the pressure may damage the optic nerve. So it's like too much pressure in the eye and that's it. You know, the optic nerve gets damaged, you lose vision, that's the story. So the whole strategy was to lower the pressure, and that's what drops do. They lower the pressure. Sometimes surgery creates little outlet channels to let the fluid escape, so there's not a lot of pressure compressing the nerve. But it turns out there's more to it than that. There's actually some cellular energetics involved. And when there's stress, whether it's pressure, circulatory problems, free radicals are generated. The mitochondria and the highly active visual receptors in the eyes run out of gas. And so mitochondrial support makes a lot of sense. And the antioxidants make sense. So there, I looked at all the studies. I wrote a nice article on glaucoma. You can find it at drhoffman.com. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago. Listing all the things, the research nutritionally that are helpful. So I think to come back to the question, I actually think there's a role for both. And if somebody has glaucoma, comes to see me, I would prescribe niacinamide or nicotinamide, maybe 500 twice or three times daily. That's a pretty high dose, but that's a type of vitamin B3 that doesn't affect the liver. In contrast to niacin, which does affect the liver.
Niacin, which is also B3, that we have to watch liver function with, right.
And then I would complement it with nicotinamide riboside. That hopefully is a good combo for glaucoma. But I got to say that there's no scientific research that supports that. And, you know, that's research to be performed in the future, but I feel comfortable that it's a safe thing for people to undertake if they suffer from vision loss due to glaucoma.
Yeah. Wow. Isabel, there's direct information that you can start on right away.
So you want to be a nicotinamide riboside glaucoma pioneer, be my guest. I think it should be okay. And, you know, especially if you're under some monitoring by a nutritionally oriented doctor who could be alert to any side effects that you might experience from too much of a good thing.
Wow. Isabel, thank you very much for your email. All right. Be well.
Can we pause for a second?
Because
what we're going to do...
Sure.
This is obviously a free podcast, but we have sponsors. So let's give one of our sponsors an opportunity to be heard from right now. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Okay, folks, thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're integral to the continuity of this free service. So back to questions, Layla.
Yeah, we've got an interesting email from Marlene. Marlene is asking about her mother, who is 82 years old, but has always been active, plays tennis, race walks, takes weightlifting, high-impact aerobics, is on no medication.
God bless.
Takes lots of supplements, yeah, including magnesium, ubiquinol. Her blood work's perfect. However, the echocardiogram readout showed all parameters either normal, mild, or trace regurgitation, with one exception, moderate to severe tricuspid regurgitation. The conclusion on the report stated that all the results were normal, and the doctor told her to come back in a year. But did her doctor miss something? In your opinion, is there a valve replacement to think about?
This reminds me a little bit of a story that I once heard, and it's a story that illustrates the power not of the placebo but of the nocebo. Famous cardiologist who wrote many of the cardiology texts that we studied, you know, when I was back in medical school, recounts an episode where he was taking medical students around. And, you know, how they kind of go around, you've never possibly been in a hospital, but you go around. I mean, you train in a hospital, so you don't have medical rounds. You go around and you talk over the patient. The patient kind of like sits there wide-eyed, tries to glean, you know, what these white-coated doctors are discussing over them, and wonders if they're not holding something back because they're using like a code language. So they used a acronym for tricuspid problems. I think they used TC as opposed to TR, tricuspid regurgitation. And they said, well, this woman is, you know, TC, has TC, TC, TC. They were talking about the TC, and then they move along. And so what happened is inexplicably this woman's condition, she was in the hospital for some minor situation, began to deteriorate dramatically. And the doctor said, well, it's really not clear what's wrong with you. What's going on? And she said, well, doctor, as much as you try to conceal it from me, I know I'm going to die. And the doctor said, well, what leads you to believe that you're going to die? And she said, well, you know, I know that you doctors use code words when you're around patients, and you keep saying that I have TC, and I know what that means. And the doctor said, well, what does it mean? And she said, it means I'm a terminal case. And the doctor smiled and said, no, TC means you have some degree of tricuspid closure. He explained it to her, and he said, you know, it's pretty common, and it's not likely to result in the need for surgery. But if it does result in the need for surgery, we'll keep an eye on it. And it can be accomplished even into your 80s or 90s. And, you know, people live well beyond that. There's a high survival rate. It's not such a big deal anymore these days. So he lifted this nocebo curse from her. She, you know, ended up leaving the hospital and survived many, many years. Not clear if she needed to undertake surgery. So what I think is the case here is that doctors sometimes see things like this, and this could be a case of negligence, because doctors often don't explain stuff to patients. They keep stuff to themselves. even slightly abnormal findings need to be explained to patients. It's not correct to have a finding that's markedly this or, you know, severe that and not have it explained to the patients. But in the context of what the doctor understands about the condition, the doctor may say, that's not a biggie. That's just not a biggie. So, I'm not sure if it's a case of where the doctor ignored this finding and missed it or didn't, you know, choose to communicate to the patient because it didn't think it was consequential.
Dr. Hoffman, is it possible that he said this is normal for an 82-year-old?
That's also very possible. And, you know, we put it in context because it might be in a 20-year-old, like college athlete, you know, who's trying out for a basketball team. That might be a dangerous thing, you know, and might lead to a problem at very high levels of exertion. But it's also a condition that may be statistically very common in older adults where the risk of repair is greater than the benefit, and one can happily live with this degree of valvular stiffness where the valve doesn't close properly. I mean, that's what it is, basically, is the valve's not efficiently closing. That means regurgitation, meaning the blood, instead of being prevented from rushing backwards when the heart contracts, a little bit blood, instead of going forward, goes backwards through the valve that's not closing completely. It's it's called an incompetent valve. It's kind of,
I see. You know,
I mean, it has a bad connotation.
You can't do your job.
Yeah, you can't do your job. You're incompetent, you know.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a famous, you know, story in medicine about, it was about tricuspid something, you know, when they use the initials instead of explaining it to the patient. It's also a story about miscommunication to patients. And, you know, I think one of the scariest things for patients is, you know, when you get a whole flock of these people, they come in like a flock of, you know, seagulls. They're all dressed in white, you know, and they're
serious. That was
serious
a band in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, that's when I trained. Okay. So, you know, it can be an alarming experience, especially when you talk over the patient instead of to the patient.
You know, and it's also, I think it's worth pointing out because of all the things that I read in the literature, I hear many practitioners saying that what the patient believes has everything to do with their outcome, whether it's successful or not. And it's a good thing that this lady found out that TC does not mean terminal case.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Because some people will become ill and possibly die as a result of what they believe to be true. So I, that's really something. Marlene, we wish your mother well and to keep doing what she's doing and taking her supplements, and more power to her and to you. Thank you for your email. Wow. All right. Oh, Dr. Hoffman, I love this next question. We have an email from Michelle. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm addicted to your podcast and have learned so much from the wealth of knowledge you both share.
She's going to have to go into
podcast
rehab.
We're going to send you to PR, podcast rehab.
Maybe they have like a nice clinic in Malibu where people can like sit around the pool and, you know, as much as they try, they just take their cell phones or mobile devices away from them and they just sit and relax and look at nature and stop getting hooked on these podcasts, which can be alarming and disconcerting.
Michelle is a 45-year-old healthy female. And she says, besides, you know, the annual pap, mammogram, blood pressure check, physical exam, what should my doctor be screening for? I hear you advertise your typical workup when you first see a patient, and it sounds so thorough. How can I ask my doctor to do the same for me?
Hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well,
first of all, your doctor, Michelle, has to go to the School of Clinical Focus podcasts. I'd say at least a year's worth.
Right. Yeah, good.
To listen and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank
anyway,
you.
Anyway, what say you, Dr. Hoffman?
Well, so this is actually something that I've investigated several times in writings and podcasts, and that is that And this is actually a theme that is now a very popular theme in medicine, which is that the so-called annual physical or the routine exam is misfocused. And it used to be, you know, you'd go to the doctor and you're feeling fine. Maybe you have a minor complaint. So the doctor every year would do an X-ray and an EKG. And, you know, they would do a rectal exam. And they would do, in women, an internal exam and a breast exam. And some of these may be on target. But when you actually study the efficacy of these screening tests in certain populations, they don't make sense. So to do an annual pap smear in an 80-year-old woman who's had a succession of normal pap smears, maybe not a good idea. Certainly, the annual chest X-ray in someone who doesn't have any respiratory complaints, it's not a history of smoking, waste of time. You're just exposing them to excess radiation. An EKG for somebody who, you know, maybe they're older, but they have no complaints whatsoever, waste of time. You know, so you know how it is with my EKG machine at the Hoffman Center. People say, that thing's gathering dust. Well, I have it because there are certain situations. I have to have one because sometimes I'll hear something or the patient will report something where it is appropriate to do an EKG. By the way, EKGs are great moneymakers because you can charge Medicare, you can charge insurance companies, and you can always make up some excuse that something's going on that justifies an EKG. More and more insurance companies are kind of pushing back against that. But so there's a lot that we do that's superfluous. There's some question about, you know, annual mammograms or annual PSAs. It's got a lot of controversy. Too frequent colonoscopies. You know, so, and then there are tests that I think are absurd, which are like whole body scans. You know, where you say, well, I'm feeling fine, but I want to know if anything's brewing in my body. Well, no, don't do that because that will lead to, you know, you might find something that's a little suspicious and undergo lots of anxiety and unnecessary tests to no avail. So,
right.
Yeah.
Where oftentimes it will be something that you will die with, but not die from, as Dr. Christiane Northrup says. Yes,
indeed. So, so when it comes to good tests, I mean, the test that we do is we will look at sometimes hormone levels, you know, to see if a person, if a man especially, or sometimes women are a candidate for hormone replacement therapy. We might look at tests like pregnenolone and DHEA, which are not commonly performed even by endocrinologists. We'll look at nutrient levels. We'll look at genetic factors like MTHFR. We'll look at homocysteine, which doctors don't like to test for anymore. We'll slice and dice cholesterol. Oh yeah, it's very hard to get homocysteine.
They don't like to.
No more.
I know that, but I thought it should be up and coming at this point.
No. It's actually.
But
down
apparently
on
not.
It. They're down. They did
they're
one
down
study
on it.
No, they did one. First of all, they were up on it for a while. But they did one study where they took folks who were at risk of heart disease and had high homocysteines. They gave them B vitamins over a period of time, and they found it made no difference. So they said that homocysteine doesn't matter. But that's missing the point, is that maybe the cardiovascular disease was so advanced that it was too little too late. And that, you know, it already had ignited the problem and maybe addressing it
and
prior.
How much B vitamins did they give them? The RDA? That's no good.
No,
that's,
I think it was,
that's not helpful.
I think it was significant amounts of folate, maybe a milligram of folate, you know, a thousand of B12 and maybe 100 of B6, which it, you know, should do something. Maybe it wasn't massive doses. But anyway, it did make a difference. But the point being is that it's more of a risk factor for cardiovascular disease and dementia than heart disease, in my opinion. I mean, cerebrovascular disease, stroke, that is. So, you know, we would want to, hey, guess what happens every time somebody comes to the Hoffman Center? There's a nutritional evaluation, and you can kind of spot problems that people have with nutrition. That never happens at a conventional visit. We might do in a middle-aged man who's, you know, just saw a guy yesterday, we have him on Lipitor. I'm not sure if he needs to be on Lipitor. Let's do an EBT heart scan and see if he's got plaque. I did the test at 64. I have zero. You know, other patients that we've tested who are raw foods vegetarians, they never eat fat or cholesterol, inexplicably, or maybe because they had too many carbs, they're loaded with plaque. So yeah. We don't know.
Yeah.
Based on tests or diet, and sometimes unpredictable. That's a good test to stratify people. But, you know, there's tests for optimization, and there's tests for that address mm-hmm. concerns. You know, like people come in
and there's and a lot of the
stool testing,
some of the testing
for example.
That we, stool testing, micronutrient deficiencies, vitamin D levels, essential fatty acid levels, gluten sensitivity. I mean, there's so much.
Yeah, I just reposted any kind article. I just reposted an article on Facebook, which was the reason I reposted is somebody else reposted it on somewhere else on Facebook, and I said, oh, well, I forgot I wrote that article a while ago, and it's a good one. And so let me repost it. 13 tests your doctor is not likely to offer, but you should ask for anyway. And I posted it on Facebook if you scroll down on my Facebook page. But they include, and I'll hemoglobin A1C, very important, glucose tolerance test with insulin, LDL particle size testing, oxidized LDL, because LDL doesn't tell the full story. Highly sensitive C-reactive protein, homocysteine, as I said, MTHFR. We can also do an omega-3-6 ratio to see if they're getting too many omega-6s or not enough omega-3s. Vitamin D, saliva cortisol, that's a wonderful test for stress. A gluten panel to see if they're, you know, have occult gluten sensitivity. Iron levels, too high or too low, that's very important. And, of course, B12 is another important one. Might include red blood cell magnesium, because magnesium very, you know, so there's so many of these kinds of things that I think make it for a more meaningful intervention than, okay, you don't have lung cancer, you know, you don't have a heart arrhythmia, goodbye, come back in a year.
And your cholesterol is this number.
By the way, take a statin, because if your cholesterol is over 180, you're a candidate.
Oh, boy, yeah. Wow, so, Michelle, yeah, good luck talking to your doctor about some of this. Maybe your doctor will listen to these podcasts.
Oh, by the way, there's a book. It's called How to Talk to Your Doctor About Complementary Alternative Medicine. And I recommend it very highly. The author is brilliant. He's well-known to me. And he is yours truly. So, and it, I wrote the book explicit. You know, the reason I wrote that book is because people like this this person who's writing to us now is not everyone can access an integrative doctor because of either geography or economics.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have to do the best they can with the doctor they have. So this book is about, you know, maybe you can encourage your doctor to dip their toe in a little bit in terms of some more meaningful or innovative tests. If your doctor should not be an imperious commander, your doctor should be a collaborator with you to the, you know, within reason, not a co-conspirator in your delusion, but a collaborator in terms of helping you shed light on your health condition and, if necessary, order tests that are appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michelle, thank you for your question. Best of luck to you. And thank you for listening.
Because a test is a teachable moment. You know, a test doesn't necessarily have to say, you know, you have cancer or don't have cancer. A test could be a teachable moment about some kind of lifestyle change or supplement that you could take that'll move you in a good direction. I think that's the value of testing, is also to help to make the path more well-lit towards wellness, is to illuminate the path so that you get a report card, you know, so because like, how am I doing? You know, how we're doing, interestingly, we got a report card recently, just the number of podcasts that we have people have downloaded. And it's gone from, you know, I remember we started the podcast about, do you believe this, just about 3 years ago. And we're now.
Has it been that long?
Well, time flies when you're having fun, but it seems like a really long time.
Yeah.
And it's really developed into this phenomenon because we had 160,000 podcasts in the month of March alone, downloads, that is.
Wow.
Podcasts, but downloads of the podcasts, which means a lot of people are listening and going out of their way to listen because it's not, you know, it takes a little time and effort to seek them out. They don't come, you know, you just don't turn on like the water tap in your kitchen. When you turn on the radio, you get AM radio, but you have to seek out the podcasts.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening, everybody. Wow. That's very gratifying. Okay. Do we have time for another?
No, we're out of time. That's why I said that.
We're out of time. Okay, yeah. Then we'll save it for next week.
In conclusion.
And our listeners will be there, so yay. Thanks. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening. And continue listening, remember our good sponsors. Also, check out our store at drhoffman.com. There you'll find products that we personally select and curate for our patients and for you at good prices. And you'll also help to subsidize some of the costs associated with putting on this production. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks, Layla, for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.